like to welcome you to the Laurel Mountain Highlands area of Narcotics Anonymous 26th Annual Unity Retreat. We would like you to join us in celebrating the recovery and fellowship that we have come to know, need, and deserve in our lives. We encourage you to share in our NA Unity through your experience, strength, and hope in our wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All are welcome to attend. However, we ask that only addicts share in the workshops. In accordance with our seven tradition, we are fully self-supporting. The money we pay for this camp and its services, as well as helping to continue to carry the NA message throughout our area, comes from your registration. If you have not registered, please see someone at the registration table. If you had, thank you for your registration. We should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection on Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. Let's carry the NA message and not the mess. So that means please clean up after yourselves on your way out. Due to the liability and safety reasons, no one is permitted to use that rock wall or any other sports activity equipment at Faith Hall. Please see a retreat committee member if you have any questions. What is the NA message? Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, because that is all we have to give, that no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. Basic text, page 65. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross-addicted, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is somehow separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. To the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. If any member of the press is present, please come to the registration table, where you will be referred to our public information chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the retreat by the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember, no one person represents Narcotics Anonymous. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. All right. Please observe no smoking in any of the buildings.
Yeah!
All right, hello everyone, I'm an addict named Bob. I'd like to welcome you to the Sunday morning spiritual speaker. This will be the last one, so after this, please clean up your mess. Will you please help me open this meeting with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Could we please have the reading of Who is an Addict at the podium, please?
Hi family, I'm Nikki, I'm an addict. Who's an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death. I can't do it.
Could we please have the reading? What is the NA program?
From the podium, please.
I'm an addict named Jason. NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Can we please have the reading? Why are we here? At the podium, please.
I'm an addict named Erica. Before coming to the Fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us had ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized that we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point. Recovery is then possible.
Can we please have the reading of how it works from the podium, please?
I'm an addict named Jeremy. This is how it works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order, and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There's one thing more than anything else that would defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you're like us, you know that one is too many and 1,000 never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form, or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we could not afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover.
Could we have a reading of the 12 traditions from the podium, please?
I'm an addict named Jonathan. We keep what we have only with vigilance, and just as freedom from the individual comes from the 12 steps, so freedom from the group springs from our traditions. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that will tear us apart, all will be well. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the NA message to the addict who still suffers. Six, an NA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, NA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the NA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. We pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. It isn't until we get involved with service that someone points out that personal recovery depends on NA unity, and that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. The 12 traditions of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. By following these guidelines in our dealings with others and society at large, we may avoid many problems. That is not to say that our traditions eliminate all problems. We still have to face difficulties as they arise. Communication problems, differences of opinion, internal controversies, and troubles with individuals and groups outside of the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our problems are like those that our predecessors had to face. Their hard-won experience gave birth to the traditions, and our own experience has shown that these principles are just as valid today as they were when these traditions were formulated. Our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces that could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It is only through understanding and application that they work.
Could we please have the reading, We Do Recover, from the podium, please?
I'm an addict named Dylan. We do recover when at the end of the road we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? Seems to be this alternative: either go on the best we can to the better ends, jails, institutions, and death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Please have the reading just for today from the podium, please.
I'm Sarah and I'm an addict. Just for today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
All right, so I'm Ag named Bob. The spiritual speaker was brought to us by fate. We didn't vote on one yet, and like Tyler got this message, our chair, out of the middle of nowhere from this lady. And like nobody had any idea how it all lined up, but it lined up perfectly. And I'm going to apologize now because I had Tyler ask her what the name of her town was again, but I know he butchered it because she taught me how to say it and I practiced it like 10 times and I thought I had it down pretty good. But then I got up here in front of all you guys and I just blanked out. So I'm going to have her say it one more time for me. Guionku. So with no further ado, I'm going to give you Audrey from Guionku, Sky is the Limit group of NA in France.
So what do I have, like 2.5 hours, roughly? At least. I'm an addict, my name's Audrey. I'm grateful to be here in the Laurel Mount Highlands area of Narcotics Anonymous 26th Annual Unity Retreat. I'm grateful to be clean just for today. My clean date is November 21st of 2011. Thank you. It was the day before Thanksgiving that year. As we know, Thanksgiving changes days every year. And I was in Pike County Correctional Center in Pikeville, Kentucky. And it was the first time that I ever said no when someone offered me something. Because I was the type of addict who would do anything and everything that anyone put in front of me. I could be dope sick and shoot cocaine. Worst idea ever. Worst idea ever. But I could do it. I couldn't say no. And my using story is really simple. I live to use and I used to live. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, you guys made it simple for me, because I didn't have that phrase before I came here. But when I heard that, I found identification. My sponsor now, she said to me a long time ago something that's really stuck with me, and I heard it last night with our main speaker. The two most important words in Narcotics Anonymous are me too. And so I hope that no matter what I say today, at some point, someone here might get that feeling of me too and feel the slightest glimmer of hope that maybe you too can stay clean, lose the desire to use, and find a life beyond your wildest dreams. Because that's what happened to me. I have to be honest that I really didn't want to speak today. I didn't want to get up here. I don't like when I don't have a subject. I feel very lost. I hate when the subject is experience, strength, and hope. And I have a tendency to get angry and to feel like the person who asks me to give experience, strength, and hope is just being lazy and doesn't feel like giving me a subject. I'm being honest, right? I'm going through a spiritual crisis in Narcotics Anonymous. I really hate cigarettes. I really hate smoking. And I hate watching addicts that I love, old-timers, die as a direct result of smoking cigarettes. I quit smoking in Narcotics Anonymous December 18th, 2019. I used the steps of Narcotics Anonymous to quit smoking. But I had quit smoking earlier in the institution because I wasn't allowed to smoke. In jail, we had the dip tobacco, which I see some people here with it. Grizzly, and we used to, this is how sick we were. We used to dry it out. After we spit it out, we used to dry it out and use the toilet paper cover, like the roll, the thing that covers toilet paper, to roll cigarettes and to smoke them in jail. And that hurts. Like, it physically hurts, but we would still do it. You know, that's how badly I had to use. And I had to quit smoking in the institution, I had to quit coffee, and when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, after 13 months of not smoking, I started smoking again because I wanted to fit in. I wanted to hang out with people in the parking lot. And I actually had dealers of cigarettes. I had this guy who I loved very much, and he would, every Friday night at my home group, give me a pack of cigarettes in the parking lot. I was 25 years old when I got here. I looked like I was 15. And I recently found out that this guy is a convicted pedophile in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Recently, this is 11 years later, 10 years later. And so I have a lot of anger. I have a lot of anger about the fact that I got re-addicted to cigarettes, that I had to re-quit smoking cigarettes. And I get a lot of anger, and it's come up again because now I'm a mom. I have a 7-month-old daughter. And there have been times where I've wanted to hug some of you here this weekend, and I felt like I couldn't because you were smoking, and I don't want to put my daughter next to a cigarette. And I get angry about this because the topic we chose for today, because I needed a topic, so I talked to my friend Devin, and we decided to choose a spiritual principle. And what we settled on after a long discussion about lots of different things was unconditional love. And something I'm scared about is becoming too recovered, right? Getting too recovered. I quit smoking, so now I can't stand smokers. I quit eating certain things, I started eating healthy, so I can't stand when people are eating unhealthy. You know, like, I never want to get too recovered for Narcotics Anonymous. Something that used to really piss me off in one of my home groups in New Brunswick, New Jersey, was there was a group that they wanted to stop swearing. They wanted everyone to stop cussing. And so they actually made a rule that if you swore, you had to put a dollar in a bucket. And this is completely against our traditions. And so they asked me to be a speaker, and you know what this rebellious addict did? I swore the whole fucking time. Every single sentence I put a swear word in it. And this other guy started putting dollars in the basket, and I was like, that's good, because that's going to go and buy a basic for a newcomer. But I don't ever want to stop. The one thing I won't ever stop doing is swearing, and I will tell you why. Because I got clean in an institution. I got clean thanks to H&I. And I got clean thanks to two people who are here today who came into that institution with H&I. One of those people is the first person I remember ever hearing share a Narcotics Anonymous message. And what I loved about Narcotics Anonymous, because in this institution we had multiple different fellowships that would come in, but the Narcotics Anonymous people were always like a little bit different. They were like tattooed, more rebellious, and they always fucking sweared in their message. And that was the language that I understood. That was the language that I could identify with. I got a tattoo on my fucking face. Like, I needed to see people who looked like me. And, like, now, for me, my life is so different. It's so different. I'm not hanging out with the same people I used to hang out with. I don't even talk like I'm talking right now anymore, really. But when I come with people in Narcotics Anonymous, I remember, and the first night in the opening meeting, I heard some stories that reminded me of what kind of addict I was. I don't think about that every single day, but I was like that. I could be seen in Brooklyn, New York, hiding between cars, thinking that people were coming after me, trying to kill me. And my first year of recovery, I heard voices that were not there. I saw people who were not there in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I had an experience in my home group. My first home group was Miracles in the Mountains. Miracles in the Mountains in the Pocono Mountain area of Narcotics Anonymous. And if you're asking yourself how I ended up with a home group in Grillon-Pour-France, I'll get there. You're just gonna have to be patient. Because I grew up in Pittsburgh, actually. I'm from Pittsburgh. And just outside of Pittsburgh in Crafton. And when I got clean in Pike County, Kentucky, in jail. And then I got sent to an institution in New Jersey where I wasn't allowed to watch TV or use the phone or do anything I wanted to do. And to be honest, my bottom was clean. Because when I was using, I was always high. I was always high or I was obsessed with getting high. And I was living all sorts of dereliction, degradation, and death all around me, but I was completely oblivious and unaware, and I was unwilling to stop. And like some of our other speakers have shared this weekend, I loved getting high. I loved the feeling of being high. I was 23 years old, and I didn't want to stop. And in reality, I was terrified that if you took the drug away from me, I was going to kill myself. Because I was suicidal long before I took up my first drug. I tried to kill myself for the first time when I was 11 years old. And I told the doctor who committed me into the psych ward as they were waiting to send me to jail that I was gonna shoot up the day I got out and think of her. Because if they took the drug away from me, I was sure that I was gonna commit suicide. I'm standing here 10 years, 9 months, and 1 week later to tell you that I don't wanna commit suicide anymore. And I haven't committed suicide, and I haven't had to use a minor mood altering substance in that amount of time, thanks to you. So I went to jail. I was facing 5 years. They sent me to this long-term institution, and while I was in the institution, my grandmother was dying, and she was writing me letters because I wasn't allowed to use the phone, and she kept begging me to come home. And she had Alzheimer's, and so as the time went on while I was there, the letters got worse. I still have the letters. And she kept writing the same sentence over and over again, forgetting that she wrote the same sentence over and over again. And the sentence was, please come home. I just want to see you and give you a hug. And I couldn't, because if I left the institution against the counselor's orders, I had to go back to jail for 5 years. And at the end, I got out. She was still alive. They let me go to Pittsburgh to go and see her. I got to spend 3 days with her. And she died 3 weeks later. And they said she didn't have another lucid moment after that. And my home group at that time was Miracles in the Mountains. I was the coffee maker. The person who gave me that service position is sitting here today. And I share a lot about this person because sometimes I didn't show up to make the coffee, and I didn't think anyone would care, you know, because in my using life, who cares if you don't show up, you know? And sometimes I just wouldn't show up, and I wouldn't tell anyone. And every single time, this person would send me a text message saying, hey, didn't see you on Friday. We missed you. I just want you to know that I love you. France, guys, isn't it? I'm the old timer now. Sometimes people don't show up to make the coffee. That is not the text message I want to send to them. In fact, usually I type out a different text message. Something more along the lines of what the fuck? And instead I erase it and I write, hey, I didn't see you on Friday. I missed you, and I love you. That's unconditional love. You guys taught me that. You taught me that. in my home group. But it was a long journey for me because when my grandmother died, I went through what we talk about in our step working guide in the third step. And I'm glad it's in our step working guide. In the step working guide in the third step, it says, we start to develop, I'm not a perfect quoter, so I'm just paraphrasing, but we start to develop a relationship with a higher power and then something happens. We go through something. The loss of someone we love, a breakup, and suddenly that relationship with a higher power doesn't work anymore. And the great thing about Narcotics Anonymous is the freedom to redefine that higher power. I have redefined my higher power so many times in Narcotics Anonymous, it's not even funny. And I don't even, in the beginning, I really needed a concrete idea of a higher power. And now my higher power is a lot more fluid. It's kind of this intuition thing. For me, it's the spiritual principles. It's simple. But it's not like, in the beginning I needed like an image and I wrote like a little prayer that I would say, and I hated the word God. I used to close meetings with Gaia. That would really piss off the control freaks, right? Like, but I just couldn't say God. I was like, it even bothers me to see crosses around places where I have Narcotics Anonymous meetings, because I was a spiritually abused, religiously abused child. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, the word God bothered me. But I got over it because I realized that for simplicity's sake, they chose the word God because it was the simplest. And the longer I stay clean, the more I realize that this relationship with a higher power just is beyond words. So the words don't really matter. But when my grandmother died, I got really angry. Like Marvin was talking about last night with his daughter. I got really angry. I was a year and a half clean. And I was like, why the fuck would you take away the one person who loved me unconditionally my whole life? Because my parents loved me conditionally. And they made that very clear. But my grandmother, she loved me unconditionally. And I thought, why would you take this person away from me right now when I'm just getting started on this journey? And I went into the rooms and I cried. I cried my eyes out. I screamed. I got angry. I got kicked out of my halfway house because I threatened to kill one of the girls in there. And found myself homeless in recovery, 18 months clean. My parents wouldn't talk to me. And I got kicked out on a Friday afternoon, and my home group was a Friday night. And I went to a recovery yoga class, waiting to go to my home group, and I sat in the parking lot waiting to make the coffee. And that was my higher power, because if I didn't get kicked out on a Friday afternoon, and if my home group wasn't Friday night, and if I didn't know that that person was going to send me a text message telling me he fucking loved me, if I wasn't there, I don't think I would have gone to a meeting. I think I would have gone to New York, because I was only about an hour away from my favorite cop spot. And I realized over a few months of going to meetings and crying my eyes out and screaming and getting angry that my higher power was able to let my grandmother die because she was suffering. She had Alzheimer's and she was really suffering. She was 87 years old. She had lived her life. My higher power was able to let her die because she had been replaced by you. Because now I had unconditional love, a source of unconditional love here in Narcotics Anonymous. And like our friend Marvin, who shared last night, I leaned on the fellowship and I stayed clean. I got a commitment in H&I. It was my birthday. I'll never forget because there was a horrible snowstorm up in the Poconos. It was March 18th, which is my birthday, my life birthday. And it was H&I. It was the first time there was an H&I meeting while I was out of the institution and I could go. And it was a terrible snowstorm and I drove there because I needed to get an H&I commitment because I needed to give back what was given to me. And I became secretary of H&I. And I started taking notes at every meeting and I started going into the women's prison on Friday nights and carrying the message. And after about 2.5 years of being clean, I realized that I really liked taking notes and I really liked learning things, and I decided to go back to university. In New Jersey, there's a university called Rutgers. It's the State University of New Jersey. You've probably heard of it. and they have scholarships for addicts that dropped out of school and want to go back. It's called the Reentry Scholarship. I got that scholarship and I went back to the university. And they have a clean dorm, but I didn't want to live there. So I lived in a house off campus. And I stayed clean. I joined the Cha-Cha-Cha group on Sunday mornings. And they told me, don't be homeless in recovery. So I started driving down to New Brunswick before I even moved and visiting meetings to find my home group. When I left Miracles in the Mountains, I moved on to Cha-Cha-Cha, which is a 1-2-3 meeting. That became my home group, and I became the GSR. And I studied, and while I was studying, I got a scholarship to go and study abroad, to go and learn another language. And I picked Germany, I picked Berlin, for two reasons. I had met people there that I liked and that were nice. And the second reason was that I knew that they had an English-speaking NA meeting every day of the week. I think I was like four and a half years clean. And so for me, what has guided my life in getting me to where I am today is that I have consistently had a home group, a sponsor, a service position. I've consistently worked the steps. Now I'm working the traditions because we have this great new book to work the traditions. Even though we work the traditions in service, I learned about the traditions through service. But I really like this new book. I love this new book, and I think it's great, The Guiding Principles, because you can work it for members, for groups, and in service. And I find that a really, for unity, it's really great. We've done this in our area. I've proposed to area that we take some questions from that book. And so I've consistently done these things, and I've consistently made decisions based on Narcotics Anonymous being available in my life. I wasn't going to go to Europe if I wasn't going to be able to go to NA meetings. So I went to Germany. I lived there. I was supposed to live there for 3 months. I lived there for 2 years. I became GSR before I even spoke German. I went to 4 hours of area service in German. And I learned German. Now I'm fluent in German. But I learned it by going to a class. I decided to enroll in a class. That's what my scholarship was for. But also, I went to NA meetings. And I wasn't afraid because I knew that the blue reading was who is an addict. And I knew that the yellow reading was what is the Narcotics Anonymous program. I learned just how to say, I'm an addict, and my name is Audrey. And I knew that they would give me 4 minutes to talk, and even if they didn't understand me, they were going to be polite and not cut me off. And so I learned German. And in the beginning, they definitely did not understand me, and it was great. And I didn't understand them either, and we just smiled at each other and hugged each other. And I think it was really powerful for me, because I'm someone who, when I got here, I liked to talk a lot. I needed to talk a lot. And it forced me to be quiet, it forced me to listen, and it forced me to learn how to have relationships with people by listening with my heart, by just being present, by just looking at people in the eye and knowing that, like, I don't have the words to tell you what I want to tell you, but I think somehow we're going to be able to communicate to each other just if we just wait long enough, and if we just sit here, and if we just sit through the uncomfortability, we can get to that other side of connection. And that's how I learned how to have a relationship with my higher power. Sitting long enough through the uncomfortability to make it to the connection. I met my now husband, who you all know now. It's hard to miss a French guy in Laurel Mountain Highlands area, I think. Especially when he twirls his mustache. I met my husband, we've already shared this story in Narcotics Anonymous, so I can kind of break his anonymity. When I went to my first meeting in Berlin, he was the first person, he was the greeter. Right? I hear some people laughing. Some people who might take the position of greeter with other interests, but I don't think that was his interest. But he was the greeter, and I walked into that meeting. He had a huge smile on his face. He had like blonde tips in his hair at that time, so he was really bright, you know, it was like the sun, and he was like, hello, welcome to the meeting, and he gave me a huge hug, you know, and we didn't fall in love right away, we didn't even really get along that well, but we had service together, and we learned how to work together through service. I joined that home group. He ended up leaving Germany and going back to France. And at 5 years clean, I was back in America recording an album with my band, because another thing that's important about my story is that I didn't want to get clean and become a square. Like, I didn't want to work in an office, a square cubicle. Like, one of my biggest fears was, like, I don't want to become normal. Like, I don't want to become boring. Routine is not for me, and it still is not for me. I can't work a 9-to-5 job. It makes me want to kill myself. That's my story. I met a woman in early recovery who's a musician in recovery, and she came to me and she was like, you see this tattoo? I got this clean. And she was like, I quit my day job and I became a professional musician clean. And she's like, so don't think that just because you got in recovery doesn't mean you have to be like, you know, wearing like Abercrombie and I don't know, whatever, like wearing Banana Republic and like sitting in a cubicle. And she saved my life, because I was like 12 days clean when I met her. And I started writing rap music, and I became a rapper. I released an album of hip hop. And then I started a basement show house that was clean, with like no drugs, and punk bands would come and play in my basement. Did that for 2 years. And I started a punk band. I was a screamer in a punk band. And I wrote a play, and I got involved in theater, and I got to realize that like anything is possible in recovery. You know, she told me, because some people they don't like to go to areas where people might be using. And in the entertainment industry, sometimes people are using. You know, maybe you've gone to a show, you've seen the people use. And she told me, Audrey, anytime you need to go somewhere where you think people might be using, just make sure you have 5 tools in your toolbox. 5 recovery tools in your toolbox. Make sure that you're, and you can choose any 5. Make sure there's 5. Like, either you drive yourself so that you can leave at any time. If you don't have a car, look up the bus schedule, know where the nearest bus stop is, and know, like, have a way out, or have money in your pocket for a taxi. Call your sponsor, bring another recovering addict with you, bring your basic text. Like, she gave me all these tools that I could put in my toolbox so that I could live any situation clean. And that has helped me over the last 10 years, 9 months, and 1 week in not only my professional life, but also my personal life. Because sometimes I've had to go into situations where my family was, and my family was using, you know, and I needed to have tools in my toolbox. I needed to know how to stay clean. So I was talking about Germany. I got in this home group. My now husband moved back to France. And I came home to record an album with my bands, and we had recorded the album. We were going out to celebrate with the guitarist, and a guy crossed the center line on a windy road and crashed into our car. And I almost died. I had my seatbelt on. I didn't almost die in the sense that I didn't go into a coma. I stayed completely conscious, but my seatbelt saved my life. Broke my collarbone in half and turned my shoulder upside down. And I had just celebrated 5 years clean. And I was like, went into crazy survival mode. I diagnosed myself before the EMTs even got there. I was like, I have a broken shoulder, a broken collarbone, and my pinky's broken. And they were like, ma'am, you need to calm down. Like, let us do our job, you know? And I had to go through 2 surgeries. When I got to the hospital, they told me that they couldn't give me any non-narcotic pain medication because they didn't know if I had internal bleeding. And so I had 2 options, either take nothing or take narcotics. I called, they were cutting off my clothes, and I called my sponsor. I was like, I don't know what to do, because I was in a shit ton of pain. And she said, Audrey, in our literature, in the chapter in our basic text, and also in the pamphlet in Times of Illness, it talks about this. Sometimes we are confronted with situations where we have to take medication. And I took medication in the hospital. And I learned through this experience, because they had to give it through me to an IV, and it was my drug of choice. And I felt that same feeling that I felt while I was using. But I learned through this experience that the drugs, I already knew this, but I learned how much the drugs are just a symptom of our problem. Because I was so spiritually centered at that time in my life. Like, I was really connected with recovery, and I really wanted to stay clean, and I really loved my life. And so I enjoyed the experience of the drug in the hospital. But the minute I got out, I didn't want it anymore. And that was really powerful for me. Because my mother came to me and she was like, here, you know, it's been 4 hours, you can have another one. And I was like, I don't need it. Because I didn't want to go back to, I didn't want to lose the life that I had. I had already at 5 years had a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I knew that if I took that drug again, that I was going to lose everything. And so I didn't. And I ended up going back to Germany. I had to get through recovery. It was horrible. I cried a lot. Like, I don't know if you've ever had, I see someone here with a cast on, Edgar. If you've ever not had the use of one hand, it's a bitch, man. I couldn't even unbutton my pants to go to the bathroom. Like, you don't even realize how much you use both hands until you can't anymore. And this accident is actually the sort of spiritual experience that I had, which had two major impacts on my life. One, I realized I could be doing everything right. I could not be smoking. I could be eating vegan. I could be running every morning. I could be driving the car in the right lane with the speed limit, with my seatbelt on, not on my phone, and I can almost die. I could be doing everything right. And it pissed me off because I was like, what the fuck? Like, I'm staying clean, like, I'm working the steps, like, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. Why did I almost die? Why am I the person with the fucking cast on my arm, you know? And, but it also reminded me that when I first got clean, I had this feeling of like, wow, every day is bonus. Because I thought I was going to die, and even I got pissed off that I didn't die because I had to use again. I had to get up and do it all over again. And so for me, it was like, it reminded me that like, I should just live my life as if it could stop at any time, just for today. You know, even clean, even doing everything right. You know, I make plans for the future, but I also try to stay in the day. And that I learned here, but it was reinforced when I went through this life-changing experience. And the second thing that happened is that my now husband and I fell in love with each other. Because we were best friends. And when I almost died, it made us both realize how much we would miss each other. And I fell in love. I allowed myself to fall in love, which is a crazy experience. Someone else was talking about this, but it's kind of like losing control. And for an addict, this is terrifying. And like all the defects of character just come way up to the surface, you know. And then I had to learn, I had written in my basic text, in the institution there were speakers who would come in and I would write in my basic text. And in my basic text I have written in really big letters somewhere, relationships are like putting your recovery in a pressure cooker. And it's written really big in my basic text, and it's so true for me. Like, it's so true, because like getting, especially a romantic relationship, it's like I had a hard enough time getting into a relationship with myself. Learning how to love myself unconditionally. I mean, you guys did that for me. But then, like, you add another person in there, and especially another person in recovery, like, you know, all I'm gonna say is that sometimes those defects of character turn into ninja stars, and I'm just throwing them at them. We have the same language, so we can, like, really throw some darts. But I learned how to love myself. Thanks to you, you guys loved me, and I learned how to love another person. And we just celebrated 3 years of marriage. He pissed me off last night, but I still love him. That's how I know that it's not like any relationship I've ever had before in my life. It doesn't look anything like all the other relationships. And I realized that when I was working on my fourth and my fifth step that those relationships were just like using. I was using people. I was trying to get high, and they were trying to get high. We were using each other. I used people in Narcotics Anonymous, and they used me. I used people outside of Narcotics Anonymous, and they used me. And then I worked the steps. I got to the 12th step. I had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And I realized that I'm coming to Narcotics Anonymous to tell you that I was a hopeless dope fiend living on the streets of New York City. I was 100 pounds soaking wet. The doctor said I was going to die from starvation before I would have died from the drugs, because I just didn't care to eat. I had to spend the first 48 hours in jail in Pike County with three inmates picking lice out of my hair. And in our literature it says, if you're not humble, you will be humiliated. The beginning of my recovery journey was a lot of humiliation. I like to share when I share for the newcomer, if you're in these rooms, if you're new, if you have any less than 3 years clean and you feel like you're going insane, welcome. That's my story. I thought I was losing my mind. I thought I had lost my mind, actually. I thought that I was too broken. I thought that, like, I had gone too far. I thought, even in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I was like, you know, you guys didn't use like me. You didn't have the same experiences as me. I was a 19 to 23-year-old girl, homeless on the streets of Chicago, homeless on the streets of New York. I carried a knife in my pocket and I had to use it. And so when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I had a lot of trauma. And I had to get outside help. For a year, I got outside help for trauma. But after a year, I realized that the steps of Narcotics Anonymous were doing for me the rest of the work. Like, I got the tools from the trauma therapist, and then I had to do the work. I couldn't just pay a therapist to do the work for me. Because recovery is about taking personal responsibility. And even in recovery, I can want someone else to take my personal responsibility. So I went and got outside help, and then I came, and I was still coming to meetings, and then I stopped the outside help, and I just kept coming to meetings. And for me, I am 100% Narcotics Anonymous. I have found every solution to every problem, to every addiction in Narcotics Anonymous. I have not needed to go to other fellowships. This is my story. Because when I got here, my sponsor said to me, in the beginning, she said to me, go visit all the fellowships that you want to, that interest you, and then pick one. Pick the one that's best for you. And I picked Narcotics Anonymous because we said in our first step, when we changed the steps, when we adapted the steps for our particular program, we said that we were powerless over our addiction, not over any substance. And I identified with that. Because for me, it has tentacles in every area of my life. And I think, I don't know how much time I've been talking there, but I think it's 10:30, so I'm gonna wrap it up. Seven months ago, I got to become a mom. And I have the most beautiful, smartest, coolest daughter in the world. Fuck all y'all's kids. I'm not biased at all. No. What I want to say is that I became a mom of a happy, healthy child, and I'm grateful for that. I work with children. I'm one of six kids. I'm the second of six kids. And so I've been raising kids all my life. But it's different to be a mom and to start to understand some things that I couldn't understand before I was a mom. And it's healing of my relationship with my parents, because I'm starting to see my place as a mother. And my place as a daughter is changing. And a lot of what has happened to me in recovery has just taken time, right? And I'm grateful to my sponsor, who also used to always say, she still says this all the time, she says, if you want to have a 20-year marriage, you need to be married for 20 years. If you want to have 30-year recovery, you need to be clean for 30 years. Time takes time. I can't get this shit through osmosis. I gotta do what the others did, you know? And I have a lot of people who sometimes say to me, like, oh yeah, like a sponsee sometimes, they're like, well, that works for you. And I'm like, no, this works for me because I made it work, you know? I did a lot of work in this program, and I do a lot of work in this program. I just finished writing my 12th step for the second time. And I actually just finished writing the first tradition that I'm gonna share with a member in France.
I moved to France for my relationship, which is the first time I ever did anything like that in my life. It was hard not to get resentful when things didn't go the way I wanted them to go, because I did this for you. And NA in France is not like NA in America. We have a lot of problems. We have a lot of, we have a generation of old timers that all have about 25 to 30 years clean that can be seen in the meetings saying things like, I don't give a fuck about the traditions. I don't work the steps. And so we got a, we had a culture clash when I got there, because I'm a little badass kid from the streets. And when I feel this like resistance, this little girl comes back out and I'm ready to fight. And in this case, not physically. I'm not talking about physical fighting. I'm just talking about, like, I will hold my, and I'm thankful for this defect, right? Because our defects were our tools when we were using, right? Like, my defects when I came in, that was what I needed to survive when I was using. And I'm grateful for this defect that I have, because it's what kept me in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous sometimes, was just the stubborn resistance to just hold on to my seat. But as a human being, my spirit suffers when I'm fighting, because spiritual principles are never in conflict. So over the last 4 years I've been living in France, I have dealt with physical violence, I have dealt with verbal violence against me. And I'm not really that violent of a person anymore, really, truly. I've dealt with a lot of that. And it's been really hard, because I've had to consistently apply spiritual principles, and we have this attraction rather than promotion. Probably my part is that I was trying to promote my way of recovering, and so I created a lot of conflict. And attraction is hard, because attraction takes time. It takes time for people to see what you're doing is more attractive. Our home group just celebrated 3 years, and after 3 years, we finally have our first, like, team of service members, because people were not coming to our home group to do service, because at Region, they were talking shit on our home group when we weren't there. I started, and when COVID happened, I started a tradition meeting online, and we decided to stay online, actually, because we struggled to get people to come to the tradition meeting, but when it's online, we can get people from all over France to come. And now we have a team. We've been over, I guess it's like two years almost that this meeting has existed. We have a service team. We have people who are interested in the traditions, and a girl who just asked me to start working the traditions with her. So I try to stay focused on the positive, because if I start thinking about what's not working, and if I start thinking about all the shit that people have done that is not spiritual, I guess to go right back into that victim mentality, and that doesn't help anybody. I wanted to leave Narcotics Anonymous a lot, because I started to feel like it was taking a lot of my energy and it was not helping me. But I don't know what it was. I don't know why it got clean the first day I got clean, but maybe I just heard you guys say it enough, you know, that like meeting makers make it, and that we need each other, and I guess it's like we say never alone, you know, NA in English stands for never alone. And so I haven't left. I've stayed, one day at a time. And it's kind of like when I was trying to stay clean in the beginning. I would just stay clean. Hi, good girl. Tu peux l'amener ici si tu veux. Je vais terminer. In the beginning, I tried to stay clean 5 minutes at a time sometimes, you know? Just help me get through these next 5 minutes. And then I would just get through the next 5 minutes. And sometimes, even in Narcotics Anonymous, it's been the same thing for me. This is my true and honest story. I'm just gonna go to a meeting, and I'm gonna stay 5 more minutes. And then I'm gonna stay 5 more minutes. And then I'm gonna stay 5 more minutes. Because there was a phrase they said in the beginning, which is, don't leave before the miracle happens. And I've had a lot of miracles already, but they've been so good that I don't want to leave before the next one happens. So I think that that's probably about all that I need to share. I want to say thank you. I'm really grateful to everyone who's done service to make this convention possible. We could give them a hand, actually. everyone who showed up to the convention, because the heart beats when one addict can share with another. So we not only need service, people who do service, but we all need also need people who come to the convention and share with us, and hopefully we'll take service at a future convention. And thank you so much for accepting that I would speak, because the quick story is that I got told by someone else that I was going to be the spiritual speaker, and then when I told the Nicole, she was like, no, I have somebody else. And in the end, it turned out that we needed a spiritual speaker, and I was here, and I was ready, and I'm happy that I could share my experience, strength, and hope with you. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Aubrey. Can we get another round of applause for her? All right, I would like to thank the speaker for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. I'd like to thank the committee. There's a lot of people that, go into making this happen. There's a lot of people that volunteered their time to help us get this thing off the ground. And I'd like to thank everybody that's still here. It's been a great weekend. Let's circle it up.
Well,